Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, welcome back, dear Blood River Radio family. Those old mean Afrikaners, I can't believe this 480 mean Afrikaners picked on those 35,000 Zulus. Anyway, folks, if you know, as we promised, we got the Bitter Ender back, and the Bitter Ender and Sister Nancy are going to, they're going to ramrod in this show, the third hour, and they've got a slate of things they're going to cover, and so I'm going to bow out of the way and let them get at it. You know, Sister Nancy's been on. Y'all been listening to her tonight on the second hour. But the Bitter Ender, we're going to bring him on down now, too. So how are you doing there, Mr. Bitter Ender?
Oh, Eddie, doing fine. Great. Good to be back with y'all. And always enjoy hearing the guests you have on. And I learn a lot from them. And Nancy's a great historian. And I know she's going to get a lot going for us tonight. So be great.
Well, we have a lot to be proud of here. We have a crew that I don't think anybody can match. We have historians and you. No one is better a historian than you are, Gene. And Nancy is a historian of cum laude, summa cum laude. And, well, you know, Miss Valerie comes on every now and then, and she is great. But anyway, and we have Monica Schaefer. Who can replace Monica Schaefer? But anyway, well, we'll go ahead and turn the outline over. Sister Nancy develops this outline for the second and third hour. And so we're going to let her take off. So go ahead, Sister Nancy, take it away.
Well, I think actually that I'm going to go with this issue. Gene wanted to talk about the murder of Michael Westerman in Guthrie, Kentucky. That's been several years ago. I guess a couple blacks got mad at him, and he was flying a Confederate flag. And when Gene was talking about this, it was quite unusual. I have several overseas contacts who are very pro-Confederate. And a young man I know, Tony Jones, about 3 weeks ago, he contacted me about this this murder. And what he wanted to do was to honor him. He wanted to somehow honor this young man who had been killed by blacks simply because he was flying a Confederate flag. And actually, I think he Michael Westerman lived right in that little town, been raised in Guthrie, Kentucky. So Tony contacted me, and I did find out where he's buried in this, you know, what cemetery he was buried in. And he tells me he wants to design a Confederate flag, it's going to be a Confederate-style flag with information about Westerman's birth and death. And I told him if he would do it and send it to me, I'll take it to Guthrie and I'll put it on his grave site. And Tony lives in England, and he started a group called, I don't know how many people were really involved. It could have been a one-man show, but I'm looking at a flag that he designed many years ago. I've got it on my wall. It says CSA, American Civil War Veteran, 1861 to 65, Europe. So he's been, you know, very interested, and many Europeans are very pro-Southern. So take it back to Gene on covering what actually happened. Did these two were the two that got, I guess there was maybe two, more than two blacks, but I guess they were the ones that got convicted of hate crimes?
Yes, that's exactly right. And that's an interesting point you made about Europe. There's a Sons of Confederate Veterans camp in Europe because a lot of the Southerners settled over there after the war, and there's also a big Confederate contingency in Brazil. Because after the war, as you know, so much of the South was destroyed, and the Brazilian government was trying to get cotton growing down there. So they were giving land away to Southerners that would come down there and plant cotton and show them how to, you know, have a bounty crop in cotton to ship to the British textile mills. So, yeah, they're Confederates all over the world. So we're very proud of that gentleman there that's recognizing what's going on over here. But we're talking about Michael Westerman. He was a student at Todd County High School, and they were nicknamed the Rebels. And their symbol painted a big Confederate flag in the center of the basketball court, and they flew the Confederate flag at ball games. And back when you could do that, before everybody fell into a panic mode about anything Southern or Confederate. So he was married, and his wife had just given birth to two infant twin girls, and they had not been out of the house or out, you know, other than just short runs since the girls were born. So they decided they were going to take a trip down to Clarksville and have a night out, go to a nice restaurant and have a meal and possibly go to a movie or whatever. And this was on January 14th, 1995. And we were talking last week about events that happened in January about Lee and Jackson, birthday, and Matthew Fontaine Murray. But we didn't get around to this event that took place in January. So they had left Guthrie and had stopped at a convenience store right close to the Tennessee-Kentucky line, and he'd gone in to get something. About this time, a carload of blacks pulled up, and they started their usual idiotic tirades and yelling and hollering, whatever vulgar epithets they could come up with. And he ignored them and went ahead and got in his truck and backed out and started down the road headed towards Clarksville, Tennessee, which is right across the state line from Kentucky. And these animals followed him and sped up and pulled up alongside of him and pulled out a gun and shot three or four times through the door. And two of the bullets hit Michael Westerman. And he slumped over the wheel, and they were trying to run his wife off the road, Hannah, run her off the road. And she got control of the pickup truck and swerved off the road and got into a parking lot for a feed mill and actually got it turned around. And they took off, and she drove back to Guthrie, the ER there at the small hospital there in Guthrie. And they had called a medevac flight to fly him down to the trauma center at Vanderbilt in Nashville. But it was a rainy, misty night, and the helicopters couldn't fly. They didn't have enough visibility to fly, so they had to take him from Guthrie down to Nashville by ambulance, which took approximately, I'm going to say, about an hour and a half. And by the time he got there and they were able to start working on him, then he had died from the wounds. So here's, they say, well, nobody ever, about the Confederate flag and, how terrible it is and, it's a threat to blacks. But here's blacks using the excuse that they saw a Confederate flag to murder a young man and attempted murder of his wife. So they finally got the people that did it, and they were arrested. And one of the things that irritated me was that the FBI had a big investigation, and they had the FBI agents coming into town and around Guthrie and Elkin and all in that area, not to investigate the murder of Michael Westerman, but somebody had burned a cross close to where the shooting had taken place. Yeah, so they're more concerned about some burned up two befores than they were about a young man being murdered out on a public road. Mm-hmm. And so the trial took place. Yeah, so that's why we call it the FBI's the federal bungling idiots. And that was my disillusionment with the FBI a long time ago, all the way back to 1995, if that's what they were concerned about. And this was before all the nonsense that they've done with Trump and the other lies and misinformation that they've tried to carry out. So anyway, the trial was in Tennessee, in Robertson County, which is right across the state line from Kentucky, because the actual shooting took place just across the state line in Robertson County in Tennessee. So the county seat is Springfield, Tennessee, and that's where the trial actually took place then in March of that year. And we had organized a memorial march for them, with the permission of the Westerman family, his mother and father. And that came from out of Nashville and went up the highway into Kentucky and to the cemetery there at Elkin, Kentucky, where Michael was buried, and got had the permission of the highway patrol and the local police departments. We did everything by the book and went there, and gosh, there were 400 or 500 people there, and just Confederate flags everywhere, and some of the family members spoke at the gravesite. And then went over to the Jefferson Davis Monument at Fairview, Kentucky, and had more speeches there. Dr. Michael Hill, League of the South, spoke. Samuel Francis, the syndicated columnist.
Wow.
And there were quite a few other people with the national reputation that spoke there. And the whole point of it was about how this Samuel Francis talked about this before it really got bad in this country, that we were facing a cultural war in this country. And Michael Westerman was one of the fatalities of this cultural war, where people were believing that if your American culture, your Southern culture didn't agree with what they did, they pretty much had a right just to kill you or attack you, physically attack you. And so that's kind of the start, I thought, of a lot of this hatred and animosity towards anything Southern, inspired by the communists, by the money supplied by these Jewish organizations, which, you know, you always follow the money trail and see where that leads you. And then the trial was in Springfield, as I said, and the Westerman family asked me if I would go there with them, sort of as their, well, support, security, whatever you want, because we knew that these black families were going to be there. And just like they intimidated the trial of the police officer in Minneapolis, and just like they intimidated the jury in the trial of the Mike Michaels down in Georgia, they knew that these blacks were going to try to go through their animalistic behavior and try to influence the trial outcome in Springfield for the Westerman murder. And the defense didn't want a jury. They wanted a judge to try it because they felt like a jury would be so biased against them they wouldn't get a fair trial in this small town. Now, if it occurred in Memphis or Nashville, they would have been very glad to have a jury trial.
Gino, if you hear the music or not, brother, we got to go to our first break, and you are knocking it out of the park, my brother.
As you are aware, America is divided over every fault line possible. This is intentionally fostered by those who do not love God, family, or country. We believe a peaceful future as a free people absolutely depends on civility. Clarion Call for Civility is looking for funding and volunteers at every level to make our hopes and efforts a reality. Please donate, sign our pledge, and help us in our sacred cause. Please visit callforcivility.com for more details. callforcivility.com.
I'm Michael Hill, president of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern Nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C., and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Former Sheriff Richard Mack recounts in his book, The Proper Role of Law Enforcement, how he came to realize while working as a beat cop how wrong the all-too-common orientation of police officers is when they think of their job as being to write tickets and arrest people. Richard Mack tells of his personal transformation from by-the-number cop to constitution-conscious defender of citizen safety and freedoms. Learn what it really means to serve and protect. Purchase your copy at cspoa.org. That's cspoa.org.
Dear Blood River Radio family, I'm going to go as fast as we can right back to the Bitter Ender, who's, our fan, our friend up north. He says that Gene is a national treasure, and if you listen to him speak, it's self-explanatory. Go ahead, Gene.
Well, probably the most broke treasurer you've ever had anywhere. I'm not smart enough to siphon off the organization's money, so I can't do well.
We're still working on that.
Yeah. Now, one thing I did forget, we were talking about that motorcade that went from the north part of Nashville up through Springfield and up to Elkton for the memorial service for Michael Westwood. I don't want to take credit for doing that. The person that organized that was Bill Rowland from down in Memphis, and he got it organized, and I just kind of filled in some of the details, contacting the Highway Patrol and the local police departments to let me. I wanted to know what you could do and couldn't do out on the road, and they were very cooperative back then. It wasn't like the police that we ran into up there in Charlottesville that didn't do anything except stand around with their thumbs stuck up their rear end. The Millersville, Goodlettsville police, the Kentucky police, the Tennessee Highway Patrol, the Kentucky Highway Patrol were absolutely outstanding. And they gave us a lot of advice and told us what you can and can't do legally. And we followed what they told us, and I think that's why they were so cooperative. We didn't have a bunch of protesters out there and then start smashing windows with all the businesses between Goodlettsville, Tennessee, and all the way up to Kentucky. We did exactly what they said we needed to do. And Bill got all that organized and sent out the word about it and things like that. So we owe a lot to him for really getting this organized. So anyway, we talked about the memorial service at the Jefferson Davis Monument. And then when the trial came along, the Westerman family asked me to go sort of as their security. And, of course, the blacks were there in the courtroom and trying to intimidate. And after each day of the trial, the blacks would be waiting out in the hall to, you know, give everybody the bad look and try to block the way out. Well, I got to hand it to the Springfield police. They only did that one day. And then the police showed up and literally pushed them out of the way to let this the family of Michael Westerman get out of the courthouse and get to their cars to go back home. So that, like I said, that was back when the police actually enforced the law instead of picking sides and, you know, going with the politically correct travesty. And one of the things that happened, then of course they were found guilty, and the public defender that defended these two blacks are actually charged with the murder, and then the other three or four in the car had accessory charges against them. They had a public defender, and he was trying to make the case that yeah, you know, it's bad that he got killed, but it was kind of like a scuffle after a football game. You know, emotions were running high, and the Confederate flag got him upset, and you know, that's was their excuse. And I thought, my gosh, I've been to a lot of football games, and I've never seen anybody get shot at a football game because they were on the wrong team. And so that was a pretty weak case. So the shooter got life, and the accessories, I've forgotten exactly what the sentence was, but the shooter got life plus 4 years. And that was the hate crime that was tacked onto that. Now, the Tennessee hate crime law was passed way back during the glory days of the civil rights era. And they passed that, of course, to keep evil white people from harassing or hurting these blacks that were marching the sit-ins at the downtown lunch counters at the dime stores and places in downtown Nashville and places like that, which the blacks took over. And, of course, the white patrons left. And that's why the business in downtown Nashville collapsed, and everything moved out to the suburbs. So that was the result of that wonderful legislation. And anyway, so they had this civil rights law that they could determine that if you had a bad opinion of certain minorities, then they could stick a heavier sentence on whatever your conviction was. But it was never used. And this was the first time in Tennessee history that this hate crime law was added to a sentence, and it was added to the sentence of a black, which was the exact opposite of why they passed the law back in the 60s, but it was the first time it was actually used. And so I thought that was kind of ironic. And then at the one day after the trial, I was walking from the courthouse down the hill to the parking lot, and a fella came up and started badgering me about an interview. And his name, and I can't remember his first name, his name is Horowitz. And he had written a book called Confederates in the Attic, which was really not very complimentary of Southerners and reenactors. And somebody had given me a copy of it. And I'm sure glad I didn't pay money for it to read it. But it was real put down and totally uncomplimentary. So he comes out there and told me who he was, and he would have done this. And then the light bulb went on. This clown was trying to get information about the Westermans and this trial. He went to their home, and they were grieving over the murder of their son. He doesn't knock on the door, doesn't call for an appointment. He just walks into the house and starts talking to them. And they're going, who in the heck are you? And he says, well, I'm doing a book, and I want or article or something. I want this information. They said, we don't want you here. You need to leave. Mm-hmm. And they almost had to literally pick him up and throw him out of their house. And so I had heard about that, and when he introduced himself and told me who he was, I flat out told him I wasn't giving him any information. So he kept on for about another block down to this parking lot, just jabbering away. Finally got close to where my car was, and I just had it with him. I just grabbed him under his chin, lifted him up off the ground, and pinned him up against the brick wall of the building there. I said, look, if you don't leave now, you're going to spend the night in the Robertson County Hospital. And I said, I am not giving you an interview. I've told you three or four times I'm not, and you quit bothering me. And what you did with the Westerman family was absolutely reprehensible, the way you conducted yourself. And after he let go of me, he kind of got his breath back, and his face wasn't purple anymore. He decided maybe he didn't want an interview there. But I always remember what a low-life character that person really was. And it's, you know, I guess he's typical of the news media. They think they have a right to harass anybody any way, any time, any hour, day, and night to get their scoop or their story. But that was my association with the Westerman family. And the people that were involved, like Bill Rowland, in putting on this caravan up there, and what we tried to do for their family and honor their son who had been murdered. And I look at that, and you think, you know, how that was treated. And so many times after that, I was asked for an interview, and with the news agency, television, whatever, and they would all say, oh, that was so tragic that young man was killed, but, and there was always that pregnant pause, and it was, well, you'd have to understand how blacks feel about that flag. And I would say, well, you don't understand how I feel about blacks, but I don't go around shooting them just because I don't like what they've done to football or basketball, or that, you know, our morning news report is a crime report that looks like the starting lineup for an NBA basketball team. I said, they offend the heck out of me, but I don't go around shooting them just because I'm offended by them. So anyway, that was kind of an eye-opener, that how the news media portrayed that. There were certain things they had to report. There was a murder, there was a shooting, there was this memorial service, there was the for Michael Westerman, and then there was the memorial service at the Jefferson Davis Monument. But they always had that but in there, you know, but this was, mm-hmm. you know, because of the Confederate flag. And they're going to use that as a crutch to hobble on for the next 1,000 years. So anyway, mm-hmm. I hope that would educate some of our listeners about what happened here. And, you know, it goes on back to this situation that happened in Memphis last night, where they released that video of those black policemen attacking that black guy. And, you know, and that was on all the news. Fox, you know, they just continuously ran that video over and over and over again, worldwide. Of course, the local TV stations here in Nashville run it. But the thing that got to me was that at the same time here in Nashville, and I'm not saying what they did was right. I mean, you know, they had the guy down on the ground, but he got up and ran away, and I'm sure they got ticked off about that. And having to constantly patrol in a black section of town, that'd be enough to drive anybody over the edge.
It will. I can bounce that.
Yeah, but the thing that the irony of it was, the other news station here in Nashville was about the two blacks here in Nashville that were on trial for that drive-by shooting on I-440, and they just shot into a car and killed that white nurse as she was going to her job at St. Thomas Hospital.
Gene, we got to go to a quick break, and we need to cover that again as soon as we come back. Be right back, folks.
Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News. I'm Jerry Barmash. Former President Donald Trump was on the campaign trail Saturday, delivering the keynote address to Republicans at the party's annual meeting in Salem, New Hampshire.
Everyone in this room shares the one key mission. We're going to defeat Joe Biden and the radical Democrats. These are radical left people. I think in many cases they're Marxists and communists.
Trump was also traveling to South Carolina for his first official 2024 event. Protests continue for a second evening after the release of the graphic video of the encounter with Memphis police that led to the death of a 29-year-old man. Five police officers involved in the traffic stop of Tyree Nichols have been fired and charged with second-degree murder, aggravated assault, and other charges. Protesters were gathering for another march in Memphis despite rain. The father of Nichols, Rodney Wells, told MSNBC it was important for Americans to watch the video.
For a individual to weigh 150 pounds and to be brutalized by five officers is unheard of, and we needed the public to see it so that they could make their own judgment.
Mostly peaceful demonstrations were held in many cities across the country on Friday. After many hours of debate, the Minnesota Senate passed legislation early Saturday guaranteeing the right to abortion, a bill pro-life Republicans have called the most extreme in the nation, Fox News reported. The Protect Reproductive Options Act passed the state Senate 34-33 after the GOP had tried to amend the bill 35 times. A major highway through southern Wisconsin is open again after an 85-vehicle pileup. Nearly two dozen people were injured in the chain reaction that the Wisconsin State Patrol says snow, ice, and whiteout conditions were factors in the initial crash. This is USA News.
With one of the best savings rates in America, banking with Capital One is the easiest decision in the history of decisions. Even easier than choosing Slash to be in your band.
Next up for lead guitar. You're in.
Cool. Yep, even easier than that. And with no fees or minimums on checking and savings accounts, is it even a decision? That's banking reimagined. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/bank for details. Capital One and a member FDIC.
Nothing fights the winter blues like a delicious and satisfying meal. Luckily, Omaha Steaks makes it easy to stock up and fill your freezer with flavor. Save on perfectly portioned favorites, easy meals, and so much more with Omaha Steaks Freezer Filler Sale. Go to omahasteaks.com and use promo code TREAT at checkout and get $30 off your order. That's $30 off an endless variety of gourmet choices. Visit omahasteaks.com, use promo code TREAT at checkout to get that extra $30 off your order. Minimum order may be required.
Being this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
Well, dear Blood River Radio family, we're right back now. We're going right back to Sister Nancy just a minute. I'm going to tune in just for a second. One of our good brothers rode the League of the South with Rich. Everybody knows Rich. He texted in. He let us know. It's some good news. Some very good news. That Tony Horowitz, however you pronounce that, the Jew that walked into the family, the Westerman's family in Kentucky, the one that tried to harass the Bitter Ender, and it almost cost him his life when he tried to harass the wrong dude, former Marine. Yeah, because I'll tell you what, the Bitter Ender is a big guy, and he could drive you into the ground if he wanted to. Well, the good news is that Tony Horowitz, that Jew, he's dead. So he's now a good Jew. Also, I'd like to say something else. The Bitter Ender said they always give that pregnant butt. Like, you know, they said, yeah, it's horrible when the people were talking about the Westerman kid who was killed up there in Kentucky. They'll say, yeah, it's horrible. But then all of a sudden they'll spend 80% of their time talking about making excuses, being apologetic about the blacks. Well, the same thing has happened to me here in Memphis when I was trying to spread the story about Eliza Fletcher, the 34-year-old mother of two, a very, very nice family, good family, who was brutal. She was snatched off the street. Labor Day weekend this past September, in case you forgot. She was brutally beaten, brutally raped, and then thrown out just like I've said before, just like a sack of garbage, because
You know why? Because she was white. She was murdered and beat, had the hell beat out of her and tortured because she was white. Because this animal that did that to her had raped other blacks. He didn't kill nary a black. He didn't torture nary a black. Because this woman here was white, he tortured her, beat her to death. And you know what? When you try to tell this story, and it happens to me regularly, it infuriates me. When you try to talk about Eliza Fletcher, you'll get that, Gene. They'll get that same pregnant but. They'll say, but. And here's what they'll say. These white, self-hating race traders will say, they'll talk about this black like they grew up with him. They'll say, well, he probably came from a bad area of town. He had it hard when he was growing up. You know, and you know how white people, all this white supremacy, it just probably beat him down all his life. So, you know, it's really horrible. And I really do feel some sympathy for Eliza. But, you know, you clearly can't blame the guy the way he grew up. I mean, it makes me just want to flamethrow those damn people. Anyway, I'm going to shut up. I've experienced that right here, too, and you're so right, Bitterender. Anyway, yeah. Sister Nancy, take us.
They've always got an excuse for them, Eddie. They've always got an excuse. They had an expression in the Marine Corps. Excuses are like a certain part of the body. Everybody's got one. Nobody wants to listen to yours, so take it from there.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Amen to that, buddy. Amen to that. But, I'll never understand these people, and I think once they get to be a certain age, there's no reaching them. No amount of education. We try to reach the people that we can still educate.
And, yeah.
But we know realistically, if you're 30, 40 years old and you're still a self-hating cuck, there's no hope for you. And may you suffer the consequences as a long one for being that way, for being a traitor. Yep. Anyway, Sister Nancy, back to you, dear big sister.
You know, I think what, again, I've repeated this before, but the problem with the white race is this built-in altruism that most of us have. It's in our DNA. Sympathy for the underdog, wanting to find the best in other people, wanting to help people. It's going to be our downfall. That's why people are saying, well, that poor black, you know, he had a poor, bad upbringing, and so whatever he did, that was the excuse. But, you know, when we're talking about the Westerman black killers, was interesting, we were trying to find if any blacks had ever been convicted of hate crimes, and that was the surprise this particular one had been, or maybe more than one in the group had been convicted. That was very rare. I don't know if we have ever been able to document another black who's been convicted of hate crimes. I haven't been able to find it, and this is kind of interesting information that this one was convicted, I guess, on a Tennessee old civil rights that was meant for a white conviction.
Absolutely.
Convict
yes.
a white.
Yeah, and it was designed, you know, for whites that stood up to this idiot integration and school busing and the nonsense that came along in the 60s and 70s. And lo and behold, the first time it was actually used in the court case was against the black. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Well,
you
mentioned something that is kind of, people probably have never heard of this either. You know, 10,000, that is what they're estimating. I've read quite a bit about this. 10,000 Southerners immigrated to Brazil. And they have a... And I have a video, and of course I've read a book about the Americana, and of course they many of them have married into the Brazilian culture and family, but for years they were having a Confederate celebration involving dancing and music, and it's just people don't. Can't believe that this really is happening, but it has happened. I'm assuming they're still doing it in Americana.
Yes.
Los
Confederados.
A southern accent.
Yeah.
It's not a topic that most people know about, but I have a video that actually shows it.
Yeah, and they had an article I read in one of the papers this year talking about, well, don't these people know they're not supposed to fly the Confederate flag? What's the matter with these people down there? And
I think,
they
I
have
think they,
the The gentlemen in the Confederate uniforms and the ladies in the antebellum dresses, and like you said, they have the music and the dancing. And they sing Dixie, but it's in Portuguese. So, you know, that's kind of interesting. So,
it would be interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I think they are trying. There's been, from what I have recently heard, that they're trying to stop them. But, you know, I don't know if they've really succeeded. But, you know, what's quite interesting, they have let's see, who was it? I think it was Carter. I think Carter went out there, and I believe he found on, you know, they have a monument that they've created, and it has some of the early names of the people who settled there, and apparently he had some connection to
some of his ancestors were there, Brazil. Well, that is interesting.
Yeah. It's a fascinating story, really, a fascinating story. A great hardship to go to a country where they did not speak the language, and then to try to do farming in a country that's full of so many, venomous animals. And, you know, some of them eat, now not this group, but some of them actually settled in the Amazon of all places.
The Amazon?
Yeah.
Damn.
Some of them settled in the Amazon. I don't know how successful they were. But I know that the one place that still survives is Americana, and that's the one place that they still live. But it's a fascinating. These people were, you know, people would say, well, why did they leave? Well, if your home had been burned down, your cattle had been killed, maybe your relatives are missing or gone, or maybe you don't know where they are. What are you supposed to do? I mean, are you going to
stay here and starve?
Living underneath these Yankees who hate you?
Yeah, under the iron boot heel of the Reconstruction government that they had here, and seeing when they came down here and picked the skeleton clean of whatever was left in the South after the war, and the Yankee Army and their camp followers took as much as they could during the war, and then it was even as bad or worse after the war. I always think Reconstruction was worse, because if you look at the battles during the war, it followed the railroads and the rivers. But then Reconstruction covered corners of states and parts of territories where there wasn't a single shot fired during the war. But with the Southern armies disarmed and surrendered, then the federal soldiers, the occupation army, and the black troops and the carpetbaggers that followed the army, they had free reign over territories in the South that were never touched by the war. And they could go out and rob those homes and take whatever they wanted. So, it was bad. So, you know, how could it be any worse if we have transportation paid for us and we go to Brazil? How much worse could it be down there?
I don't know how the Yankee army wasn't down there. That's one plus. Of course, you know, they had slavery in Brazil, and that was another thing they could say, well, that's why they went, which I think it had some bearing on it. But at any rate, they've done, you know, many of them survived and had families, and they still had a great love for the South. And I was, on a subject that you know so much about, I'm going to give you a quote, which I'm sure you've heard many times. I have a file on Nathan Bedford Forrest, and, you know, as you well know, our leaders in the South, and who would have a group of men that they were leading, they led from the front.
Absolutely.
And, Sister Nancy, I hear the music. We've got to go to our final break this third hour. It's going so fast. Well, dear Blood River Radio family, we'll be right back. We'll go right back to Sister Nancy and Brother Gene as soon as we get back from this message.
What is great about America? Ask an Immigrant. Ask an Immigrant is a new podcast dedicated to helping Americans, especially our youth, value, appreciate, and be grateful for the freedoms we have here in America. Join host Lydia Wallace Nuttall as she interviews immigrants from around the world to discover their inspiring personal stories about why they came to America. To learn more about why America is the most prosperous, greatest country in the world, download the Loving Liberty app or go to lovingliberty.net.
Hey, this is Matt from Blood River Radio. Blood River Radio is your voice to save our land, our people, and our future. we propose Christian solutions to an anti-Christian assault on our bloodlines. We love what we do, but we cannot do it without your help. The annual operating cost of Blood River Radio is more than even a team of people should bear alone. With your donation, we can take the fight to our enemies and hold our own people accountable for their treachery against us. Please go to our website, www.bloodriverradio.com, and find a way to help us that is suitable for you. We are thankful for any cash, check, or money orders we get. We also appreciate your correspondence or letters of encouragement. Once again, please help, and thank you for joining the fight.
Small Business Tech Guys is a team of experts ready to assist you with any service relating to growing your business. Our team specializes in information and technology, social media, general consulting, and HR. We thrive on assisting startup entrepreneurs with growing their businesses. If it's small business, it's our cup of tea. To schedule your free discovery call today, consider sbtechguys.com. We keep an eye on tech, so you don't have to. sbtechguys.com.
Oh, dear people, dear Blood River Radio audience, I got to make this quick announcement. I got to go right back to Sister Nancy and Sister James, Brother James. I don't want to interrupt the flow of what they're doing, but I want to contrast something here. You've heard me talk about you people. I've been calling this Mr. Steve Mulroy. He is the prosecuting attorney, district attorney, Shelby County, Tennessee. And Kevin J. Ritz is the good Jew. He is the United States attorney over the Western District of Tennessee. I've been primarily calling Mulroy, trying to gouge them into when are you going to prosecute this black who killed, brutally tortured, and raped Miss Eliza Fletcher? And why have we not even heard a mentioning of a hate crime prosecution for them, when in contrast that to the lightning speed they've arrested, indicted, and jailed these five police officers, black police officers that they are, and not a single one of them have been discharged with first degree murder. They've been charged, the worst of that they have been charged with and indicted with is secondary murder. Contrasting that to the Mac Michaels in Georgia, all three of them, even the guy filming the whole thing, he just used a camera. He's doing like 60 years in prison. But both of the Mac Michaels, the father and the son, have serving two life sentences, one under a hate crime, like a life plus six years. But I just want to mention that. I don't want to dwell on that. I just wanted to kick that out there so you people could think about it. I don't want to interrupt the flow of the show. That's doing fantastic. So back to you, Miss Sister Nancy. Please continue on talking about what you and Gene were talking about. I don't want to interrupt the flow of the show. I just want our people to know those facts.
No, you're absolutely right. And all I was going to do was, I was just going to give a very short quote that was supposedly said by Nathan Bedford Forrest, because he would lead from the front, and of course he was a gallant, great, fantastic soldier, leader, and he said that he said, "I ended the war a horse ahead." Now what that means is he had 29 horses shot underneath him, and he personally killed 30 Yankees. So he was one horse ahead.
Funny as hell. You told me that. That was really funny. But true.
Yeah, it was the truth. But I just thought, Gene, you might want to talk about where he came from and how you happened to be taking care of his home, his youthful home, and how people could maybe help to keep that building, that structure.
Oh, be
going.
Glad to.
Absolutely.
Nathan Bedford Forrest was born in Chapel Hill, Tennessee. And at that time, it was Bedford County, and that's where he got his middle name. And then later on, they split that part of Bedford County off and part of Williamson County and created Marshall County. So today, the home is in Marshall County, but when he was born there, it was Bedford County. And then Nathan was his grandfather's name. And then in 1997, the Sons of Confederate Veterans acquired the property where this boyhood home is located. And this is the only house that we know of that Forrest lived in during his lifetime that's still standing. So we're very committed to restoring the house, which has been done, and maintaining the grounds. And now we're in the process of building a visitor center, which would have a museum, gift shop, and office, and then a big long meeting room in the back of the building to further the education and the memory and the brilliant military record of General Forrest. And we're not going to make another museum. Everybody's got a museum with rusty swords and pistols. In our display area, we're going to have 16 of these 3x3 cases or kiosks, whatever you want to call it, with three-dimensional maps explaining 16 of the battles or campaigns that Forrest fought in to bring his military history to life. And so I've been very fortunate to have been working down there and working on the property. And like I said, we're in the process of getting this visitor center built. And if people would like to help, we certainly appreciate any donations that can come in, you know, $5, $10, you know, there's nothing too small. We need is whatever we can get. And they can just send it to the Tennessee Division SCV and Post Office Box 782 in Lebanon, Tennessee, 37088, and just mark on your check there for the Forrest Hall Visitor Center, and that will go to our construction project. Or you can just send it to them and just say Forrest Home, and it takes a lot to maintain a place like that. And what we're doing, trying to do, if we get this, we get a budget from the, it's owned nationally by the Sons of Confederate Veterans, and we get a budget every year, but we're hoping with this visitor center and having it open 5 or 6 days a week, the home and the visitor center will eventually be self-sufficient and make their money off of well, we've had 6 weddings out there. We've had scout troops that camp out there. We have tours for homeschool students. We have car shows. We've had, and our big event is the homecoming event that we have out there every year, the third Saturday in June. And this June, the 17th of June, it'll be our 21st homecoming event that we have. It's an all-day event, and we make a pretty good bit of money off of that with all the different things that are going on that day. So thank you for the time to give us a plug out there. And anybody that's visiting in Middle Tennessee, if they'll contact the Sons of Confederate Veterans, they'll give them my phone number, and you can call, and we'll make sure that I'm going to be down there working the day you want to come. Or if you're just driving by there sometime and the front gate's open, means I'm there working, come on out or come on up the driveway. Throw you on the tractor and have you cut grass, but still, you know, we'll get a tour of the home in too. So,
you know, I ran into you when I was at Mule Days in Columbia. I believe I ran into you over there at Chapel Hill. I believe that's how we met many years ago. I love Mule Day in Columbia.
You got me confused with a mule. That I know that's what happened. But mules have much longer ears than I have. I want to make that point right now.
Well,
okay.
When are you actually open? I mean, when?
Not right now. That's why I'm saying. If they'll just call SCV headquarters, that 800 number, 1-800-MY-SOUTH, and they'll give you my phone number. And then, you know, if you're going to be in Middle Tennessee, say next Wednesday, I'll just make a point to be there. Or if I can't, I'll say, well, I've got a doctor's appointment. Can you come Thursday or, you know, Wednesday afternoon or something like that?
But in the future, it will be open. Is that what you're thinking?
Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly. Okay. That's what we want to do, and especially having it open Saturday and Sunday when most people are off and can come by there. Mm-hmm. And then have enough of a staff where we can keep somebody there to maintain it, a couple of people each day, to have it open there and give tours. And, you know, we have no shame. We sell T-shirts and books, good Confederate books and bumper stickers and whatever we can do to make a dollar. So,
well, were you familiar with my little story about the Antoinette Polk and Nathan Forrest?
Yeah, that's a good story. We've still got some time. Can you give our listeners a brief synopsis of that and where she wound up in Europe and all the things like that?
Well, were you familiar with it? Go ahead.
I just like to say one thing. God willing, Blood River Radio, I want to go up to the homecoming with Gene, and we have a three-hour program now. God willing, we want to go up to Chapel Hill, and I'll get Matt Goodwin with his stinger. And me and Matt Goodwin and Gene, we can broadcast 3 hours of Blood River Radio from there. And also, I'm sure we'll have no trouble piping in to TPC for 3 hours because, you know, with my buddy James Edwards. So that's what we do. We cooperate. That's what I'd be giving 6 hours of radio right there. So back to you, Nancy.
Yeah, well, you'll have a lot of people to interview there. We always have historical speakers and a lot of the reenactors and people like that. So I think that'll be a very interesting program for our listeners.
I'm sure it would. I'm positive it would.
Yeah, I'll make it very brief. I was planning to go to Mule Day in Columbia, Tennessee, and I loved that event. And instead of going, I received their catalog, and in the catalog they were talking about something that triggered me to do more research, because it said, this is what it said from the catalog that they sent from Mule Day in 2011. They said, a young lady, Antoinette Polk, made a heroic ride from Columbia to her home in Ashwood to warn her friends and family that the federal troops were headed their way. She no doubt saved some lives that day. For her efforts, she was presented a battle flag by General Nathan Bedford Forrest.
Wow.
This flag has been restored and is back in Maury County after years in Switzerland and France. It's an interesting story. End of quote. At the bottom of the page was listed the telephone number for the Maury County Convention and Visitors Bureau in Columbia, Tennessee. So as I often do, I started snooping around. I contacted the man who was at the Maury County Convention Center, and at any rate, Antoinette Polk ended up living in Europe and Switzerland and France, and she took this flag with her. She married a French man of royal descent, and then her son married in Kentucky. And ultimately, her daughter actually married in Kentucky, and she married a man named Brigadier General Ronald von Stockham. The granddaughter of Antoinette Polk made her home at Allendale, right here in Kentucky, in Shelby County, Kentucky. And ultimately, they donated this flag back to Maury County. And over the period of time, this flag was put in a frame, and I have a photograph of the people who donated it at the time in 1999. And, of course, I was thinking this was a Confederate flag. In fact, I called Mr. Duncan to ask him if I could come and see it if I were to come back to Columbia. Well, he said no. He said it's not a Confederate flag. He said it was the straight Confederate Polk flag in which General Nathan Bedford Forrest had actually ruined Colonel Strait's reputation by making him surrender his entire command. So it was a Union. It was a Union captured flag. So it's a very interesting story. For me, it was quite interesting, because if I ever go back to Mule Day, I still intend to see this flag.
Yeah.
It made a big
Absolutely.
Circle.
That was Forrest's accomplishment of capturing Strait's raiders. That mm-hmm. took off from over in Decatur, Alabama, and went across the northern part of Alabama. Their intent was to cross into Georgia and cut the Western Atlantic Railroad between Atlanta and Chattanooga and take out that vital supply line for the Confederates. The supplies coming up from Atlanta and Georgia and points south through Atlanta and up the railroad to the Confederate forces near Chattanooga and up there. And Forrest, in a two-week running battle, just chased them down. And finally, just like you said, got them cornered and sent in a white flag demanding their surrender. And he stood facing Colonel Abel D. Strait. And back behind Forrest was a hill. And Forrest's men would ride around this hill, and then they would change hats and change horses and come back around the hill again. And Strait was looking over Forrest's shoulder and trying to count how many there were, and they would have orderlies or couriers ride up and say, General, the 9th Alabama Artillery's here. Where do you want them? Say, well, I'll post them over there on that hill. And then somebody else would ride up, sir, McLemore's brigade's here. Where do you want them? Well, I guess over there on that hill. And, so Strait was talked into surrendering. And then after they were disarmed, he found out that he had about two or three times as many men on the field as Forrest had. And he was furious that he'd been tricked into surrendering. And Forrest told him, well, Colonel, it's not the first time that a bluff's beat a straight. So there you are.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
I love that.
How do you do? Well, folks, we are completely out of time. We're almost up against the last second, so we got to go. But thank you so much, Gene. Thank you so much, Sister Nancy, Sister Monica, and Mark Tomey. Thank you so much for coming on. Thank you, Jay and Eliza. Thank you, dear Blood River Radio audience. Tune in the same time next week. It'll be February 4th. God bless you. Good night, everybody.